When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Big Ten Football Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Guggenheim. We're talking all about Michigan. If you like the podcast, make sure to follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify. Make sure to especially to follow us on Spotify as well as YouTube. Hit that like button. Make sure you subscribe. And of course, Don't just watch me on here and listen to me on here on the Big Ten Football Talk podcast. Make sure you hit us up on the College Huddle, the Big Ten Huddle, on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. live. And then as football season gets into gear, we'll be on there quite a few times. Also, just make sure to check out the network in general. We're having some fun on there. We'll be talking some Michigan on there as well on Tuesday night on YouTube. So definitely make sure to follow us here. Next Monday, I'll have JR on. We'll talk about the state of the Big Ten and kind of go with the shift that we're going on this podcast. And I'm going to start reaching out to people. You guys are going to get to listen to a lot of great voices who know their programs really well. So I'm really excited about it. We're talking Michigan, though. They had their spring game. I'd love to get to some of the other spring games, but I realized I just didn't have time to really see what else happened. And I figured that would be really good, a really good opportunity to talk to other folks about their perception of the spring game, their team's spring games. And so instead of getting my half-witted perspective, I figured I'd get someone who actually saw from their perspective, from a fan's perspective, and we'll talk about it then, unless you're Minnesota who didn't have a spring game because PJ Fleck's weird. You all know how I have a love-hate relationship with PJ Fleck. He doesn't know that, but anyway, this is starting out great, isn't it? I want to start with the spring game. I watched the first half of the Michigan spring game, and I thought the things that I saw were, I thought, indicative of what I expected. I thought Alex Orji, who's probably the presumptive starter at this point, thought he looked fine. You know, I thought he was a little jittery in the beginning, hit some throws later on in the game. You know, he certainly has a cannon for an arm, really good athletically. Obviously, it was a change of pace for them. I forget who the second quarterback was. It wasn't Jaden Denegal or Jaden Davis. I'm trying to remember. He's a walk-on. He had a really good story. I'm going to butcher his name. I think his last name was Allen. I thought he fired some throws. I thought that looked good. But overall, I thought that the quarterbacks were up and down, which is kind of what you expect of new quarterbacks. You know, famously, Justin Fields for Ohio State, his first spring game, he was like 4 of 13, and people are like, oh, he's a bust. You really can't take anything away about how good these quarterbacks are going to be. You know, I thought Alex Orji struggled with accuracy at times, but I think he's got the raw tools, right? He's athletic. He can make off-platform throws. I thought he had a couple of really good, nice reads where he altered his arm angle. Clearly has the arm talent. You know, I think the receivers are going to be fine, right? Tyler Morris, who made a big play in the Rose Bowl, made a couple of plays. Obviously, Donovan Edwards is back. You know, so there's a lot of buzz around the offense, only returning one starter in Colston Loveland, who is a stud, by the way. But you forget that there's a lot of guys who still have experience. So Miles Hinton, he's played a lot of ball. Andrew Gentry is the younger brother of Zach Gentry, I believe. I might be getting that wrong. So Michigan fans, go easy on me. They, my point is, they've got guys who have experience. The issue is not going to be maybe the first wave of guys. It's the depth behind them. Same thing. And so the offensive line, I think, is going to take a step back. Not, I don't think it'll be a huge step back. I think they're still going to be physical. But they were getting beat. I thought they got beat a little bit more in this game, at least in what I saw. I think my other concern, you know, you go on the defensive side of the ball. Again, the defensive line is going to be one of the best in America, if not the best in America. You know, that front line of Moore, Grant, Graham, and Stewart is going to be legit. So anyone thinking, well, they lost Chris Jenkins and other guys. Listen, this defensive line is still going to be top notch. The defensive backs are going to be really good still. You know, Will Johnson, really, really good. I think they have a couple of corners waiting in the wings who they're excited about. I think the transfers at linebacker, Barham and Hausman, I think they're going to be really good. So I thought the defense in general played well. I did think at times that the defensive line got gashed in ways that I didn't expect. But again, I think Michigan's offensive line will be fine. Like, I don't think they're going to be terrible. My big question marks out of this game was the safety position. There are a couple times they got beat on kind of routine plays, like they just got lost. Now, do I think that part of that's going to be coaching opportunity? Absolutely. But I think, again, you lost Rod Moore. You lost Keon Sab in the transfer portal. You lost Mikey Sandrastil. Like, there's a lot of players that you lost either to the draft or to graduation or injury, transfer portal, at that safety spot and slot corner spot, where that gives me concerns. And you are facing a really, really tough schedule next year. You know, a lot of teams that like to air it out, including in week two against Texas, right, with Quinn Ewers. So I'm concerned about that. You know, I want to see more. I want to see these quarterbacks progress, and you don't get to see it. Like, week two, they're going to be thrown into the fire. So I just am a little concerned about them. And listen, anytime you lose potentially 15 guys to the NFL, that's going to set you back. I don't care how deep you were. Like, you could have been the deepest, and I think they were the deepest team in the country last year, maybe aside from Georgia. But the reality is you have to replace a lot of bodies, and you no longer have the benefit of the doubt of an injury. Remember, Zach Zinner went out in the Ohio State game, and you're thinking, oh no, what are they going to do? Well, they plug in another high-quality starter on the line. They may not have that luxury this year. And I think it's true on both sides of the ball. So what does that mean for Michigan? Well, you look at the schedule, you know, Fresno State, which is, that's not a gimme, right? It's an FCS or a group of five team. They're good. Michigan should beat them fairly handily. But what I would say, watch that game and see if they struggle, because that'll give you kind of an idea of where they're at least early in the season. They get Texas. That's a toss up at this point. I would argue Texas is going to be going into that game the favorite. Arkansas State, that's a win. USC might be the biggest unknown in the Big Ten, because I think with Danton Lynn coming in and changing up that defense, you know they're going to be good on offense with Miller Moss at quarterback, with Lincoln Riley being the offensive genius over there. That's going to be a tough game. Minnesota, you know, I'm not sure what to expect from the Gophers, but, you know, they've been tough on the lines in the past. We'll see kind of how they do, especially with their transfer quarterback coming in. Washington's going to be a completely reconstructed team, so that's tough, but you got to go to Washington. So that's tough. You got to go to the wind tunnel in Champaign, Illinois. You get Michigan State, who's got renewed energy with Jonathan Smith and Aiden Killis. Then you host Oregon. Speaking of dynamic offenses that can exploit your secondary, Indiana, Northwestern probably should win those games. And then you go to Columbus. That's a tough schedule with a team that has lost a ton of depth and has question marks at safety and quarterback. So do I think that Michigan has enough to ground and pound their way to a number of wins? Absolutely. Like, this is a team that can still make the playoff, especially the 12-team era. There are, I would say, four games. If you are a Michigan fan, I feel like there are four games that define your season. It's Texas, USC, Oregon, and Ohio State. And I think it's very possible that they lose all four. I think it's possible that they win three out of four, right? So, like, I think that's the reality of this season. And then I don't think this is a team that is immune from an upset. Just from my early thoughts about this team, right? Like, a lot of people might laugh at this. Illinois is not a place I want to go in terms of playing a game because of the way that stadium is constructed, that the elements just become a factor. Just Illinois is really good at springing an upset or two. Not where I'd want to go. I wouldn't want to go to Washington, right? I know Washington is losing like everybody, but I wouldn't want to go there to play. I wouldn't want to go there with, having to go there with the time zone change, Jed Fish trying to make a name for himself up there. You know, there's still some talent on that team. Like, I don't know if Washington is going to make a bowl next year, but that's still not a game I would want on my schedule. So this is, as I'm talking about the concerns and the question marks I have, can Alex Orji be 75% of what JJ McCarthy was? I don't know. Because I think he's got the athletic ability. I think he's got the arm strength. You know who else had that? Joe Milton. He was terrible. If I hear another NFL draft analyst say, he should go in the first round because he's got a cannon for an arm and he can throw the ball 80 yards. Da-da-da-da-da-da. I don't care. Don't get me started about the draft. That leads to the news that the NCAA, they've done a couple things. They've actually done a couple things. Were they good things? Not really, but we'll get into that. One was good. One was good. They approved the new technology rules, which allows programs to put the in-helmet communication system to one player on the team so that the coach can communicate to them through that. And in a vacuum, it's like, yes, this is, I think, a good step forward. I think most programs in Division I FBS have the cachet, the money to do something like that. There's several other rules, including using tablets to view in-game video only, which is interesting. Interesting that they included in-game video only. I thought it was interesting too. The communication from the coach to the player will be turned off with 15 seconds remaining on the play clock or when the ball is snapped, whichever comes first. My question, how do you monitor that? Like, that just seems like an impossible rule to enforce, which should just be the subtitle of the NCAA. The NCAA, rules we can never enforce. Right? Can we just tagline that? Make a t-shirt. Let's do it. Right? Like, this is ridiculous. Like, that's a ridiculous, but I appreciate what they're trying to do. Again, I often appreciate what the NCAA is trying to do. The execution's awful, but that's besides the point. The other big issue is that they have approved a 2-minute warning, which is now in tandem with stopping the clock on a first down inside 2 minutes of the half. So those are things, you know, they already approved that rule. They now approve the 2 minute warning, so you get an extra timeout, which, you know, I don't have, I just hate that they took away, you know, getting the clock to stop on first down. Like, if you're gonna say you want to shorten the game and then add a bunch of commercials, just say you want to make more money. Like, I don't, they continue to make the game not fun. And I love that you could, you know, the first down thing I think needs to change back to the way it was. I loved having the clock stop on first downs. I don't know. That's just my feel. I want to go back to what I said before. I said in a vacuum, makes sense. It's not in a vacuum. This rule started to pick up steam after the whole Connor Stallions thing, right? With Sinegate. And I've tried my best not to say anything about Michigan in terms of the scandal. I'm trying to be as charitable as possible because I don't want, there's just so much that is out there that you don't know. And so I've tried to be very, very unbiased, despite the fact that I'm a Buckeye. I've tried to be as unbiased as possible with this whole thing. But the fact that this got approved, and it got approved for next year, it feels like there is maybe some more smoke that comes along the way. And I know I've said that. The NCAA works at a snail's pace. So for anybody saying, well, people keep saying that, nothing's happening, yada, yada, yada. I get that. But it takes the NCAA a while to do anything. Now, do I have any confidence that they will, whatever they do, it'll be the right thing? No. But I do think the fact that they approved this rule, again, in a vacuum, it's like, oh, it's just a rule change. But this rule change is it's explicitly going against what Michigan supposedly did to cheat, which is steal signs before games, which I thought, again, the language in the NCAA announcement, not just for the in-helmet communication, but using tablets to view in-game video only, which means any video about practices that you may have filmed or other games that you've filmed or anything else, like, you can't use. You just can't use it. And so it kind of feels like this is a strategic strike to curb whatever the NCAA thinks, or whatever, maybe at least what other coaches think Michigan did. Which leads to the last part of this, and I'll kind of give you my thoughts on this. So Michigan did get slapped with some NCAA violations this past week, or maybe the week before. Michigan and five individuals who currently or previously worked for its football program have reached an agreement with the NCAA enforcement staff on recruiting violations. So this is for Hamburger Gate. This is during the COVID dead period, which it's not just about a cheeseburger. It was about recruiting violations during a dead period. That's why this happened. It was, you know, it was a breach of the rules. And this is what happened. This is, so a committee on the infractions panel approved the agreement. One former coach did not participate in the agreement, and that portion of the case will be considered separately by the Committee on Infractions, after which the committee will release its full decision. If I had to guess, because there was some smoke about nothing has been finalized with Jim Harbaugh, I would imagine that Jim Harbaugh is the one that did not agree with the agreement. So that's my guess. The agreed upon violations involve impermissible in-person recruiting contacts during a COVID-19 dead period, impermissible tryouts, and the program exceeding the number of allowed countable coaches when non-coaching staff members engaged in on and off field coaching activities, including providing technical and tactical skills instruction to student athletes. All right, so that's a long list, right? And the negotiated resolution also involved the school's agreement that the underlying violations demonstrated a head coach responsibility violation, and the former football head coach failed to meet his responsibility to cooperate with the investigation. The school also agreed that it failed to deter and detect the impermissible recruiting contacts and did not ensure that the football program adhered to rules for non-coaching staff members. So there's a number of things here that are problematic, right? So you have the actual violations, and then you had the failure to cooperate with the investigation, which was always going to be the bigger issue, right? Jim Harbaugh saying, I didn't lie, I didn't do any of that. You know, he, in a sense, the NCAA saw it as not cooperating with the NCAA, which is one of those things where you could easily get hit with lack of institutional control, or all, some of the big words that they use to slap you with a really, really big violation and really big sanctions. And so here's the sanctions. All that. That's all that they found, right? And this is the minor one compared to Sinegate, right? And this is what they decided. The agreed upon penalties in this case include 3 years of probation, a fine, and recruiting restrictions in alignment with the level one mitigated classification for the school. The participating individuals also agreed to 1 year show cause orders consistent with the level two standard and level two mitigated classifications for their respective violations. What does that all mean? Well, it means that if they get in trouble again, then it gets really bad. That's what the probation is for. The fine means you lose money. Duh. And the recruiting restrictions are in alignment with level one. I honestly don't know what that means. I need to look it up here. But it did not seem very clear on what those recruiting restrictions are. But my question, and actually JR brought this up on our podcast. He made the point that even if they are restricted, what's to stop NIL from basically making scholarships for some of these players who then have to walk on? If they're actually losing recruiting, if they're losing scholarships. I don't see how that is going to hurt people anymore. And I thought JR made a really good point on the Big Ten huddle. And then the show cause, well, you know, basically if any coach is hired or is on staff at Michigan, they have to give a reason why they should be hired, a good reason, and a good reason why the school and the program itself should not be hit by NCAA sanctions, which means, because nobody's come out and said, well, I have to leave the program, or Michigan has not said, I have to show cause of why this coach is going to stay with us. So basically, presumably, most of the coaches, if not all the coaches, that got this show cause are no longer working for Michigan. So the million-dollar question is, does this actually matter? Yes and no. Let me go with the no first. It doesn't matter in the immediate, because the reality is it's not going to impact recruiting that much because of NIL and the way NIL works right now. The NIL has defanged, it has made the NCAA toothless when it comes to anything recruiting at all. Like, so you want to take away scholarships? Well, if you have a big enough NIL, it doesn't matter. Because you'll have boosters who just say, okay, you don't, just leave the scholarships to us. They'll be unofficially supplied with a scholarship plus, you know, another $100,000, right? It doesn't do anything. Probation doesn't do anything. It's say, hey, just don't do it again, right? And this is a big case for years, and it's probation. That's it. And a fine. Like, no offense, who cares about a fine? Like, do you know how much money Michigan is making with the TV deal alone? Like, it's just absurd. This is it impacts the coaches that are no longer with the program more than the program, which I've been saying since before this, before Signgate, whatever the NCAA cooks up, it's not going to impact Michigan that badly because everything is retroactive, right? So even if you lose a national championship, it's vacated. Guess what? We all remember it happening. Nobody's taken away the rings. And if they take away the trophy, they'll still have the banner. And it'll be burned in my memory, right? Does anybody remember that USC didn't win the national championship in 2004? Because I sure as heck do. I saw them pants USC or Oklahoma in that game. All right? Like, does anybody think that Reggie Bush doesn't have his Heisman still? I know they took away the trophy, but like, Reggie Bush still has the Heisman, man. Or he still is the Heisman winner of 2005. I don't care if the club said he was kicked out. We all saw him win it. He gave a speech. You can't undo it. And this is where I get annoyed, because the NCAA has taken so long to gather all this stuff and all the things that they said. And again, they don't line it up line by line. But if you look at it, you're like, oh, that's a lot. And like, they got a slap on the wrist. Part of it is a lot of the coaches are gone. But part of it is they acted too slowly. Now, it doesn't matter currently. Here's my one thought of why it does matter. I think the 3-year probation is dumb. And it would be really, really dumb if there's nothing else coming. Again, that's in a vacuum. But I do think this gives us maybe a picture into where the NCAA is headed. They clearly think that whatever happened with Signgate and like the things that were unearthed were not good, which is why they changed rules. They changed rules not to allow it, but to mitigate it. Okay? So that matters. That matters a lot. Now, what they're going to do, I think, is they are going to look seriously into this. And I think because there is now a 3-year probation, even though this probation happened, it was slapped on after Signgate happened, I think you can make a real argument that, hey, they should have been on probation, you know, because of this. And then they made another violation. I do think there is a real possibility that they come down pretty hard on Michigan. Now, does it matter in terms of will they vacate a national championship? I think that's dumb. I think it's gutless. Like, if you were going to penalize them, you should have taken them off the board last year. But they didn't. And I say it as much like as much as a fan, I hated Michigan winning the national championship last year. The fact is, they won the games on the field, and regardless if they had help or not, you know what? Teams could have stopped them, and they didn't. And it's not Michigan's fault that the NCAA is slower than a snail, right? Do I think that, like, if they did cheat, should they be punished? Absolutely. But it is not their fault that the NCAA is incompetent. And so I don't really care about that, but I do think the future could be, at least the next 5 years could be in jeopardy, because you could get to a point where you lose, it's not just recruiting violations, but, you know, maybe more coaches are found to have been associated and they have to be fired. Like, imagine if Sharon Moore is implicated and he's fired, or you have a bowl ban for 3 years and a playoff ban for 3 years. Now, all of a sudden, you're not only losing scholarships, which that can be supplied a bit more through NIL, but if you get a bowl ban or if you get playoff ban, that can really impact recruiting, I think, far more than anything else. Because you're basically saying you're going to be irrelevant in this conference for the next 3 years. Like, even if you win all your games, you don't go anywhere. That's where I think that's the only card that the NCAA can play that would make it seem like, oh, they actually care about this. Because if you give Jim Harbaugh a show cause, well, guess what? He's in the NFL. He knew it was coming. Right? And you can't show cause a coach in the NFL. This is, it's only for college. Right? So it's the only, I think a bowl ban and enough scholarship losses where you really have to put a dent in your NIL, like that, those are the two things, aside from firing current coaches, those are the only things that you can do to really not cripple the program, but to really give weight to the rules that you say you want to enforce. And so I think there's enough here that gives them the leverage to do so. But man, do I trust that the NCAA will do something? No. And to be honest, I think it would be better for the sport if the NCAA does something that is incompetent here. Because it will be a final death knell to the oversight that, and I should say lack of oversight that the NCAA has provided for the better part of 35 years, or however long this sport has descended under the NCAA's ridiculous incompetence. And as much as a fan, as I would love to see Michigan have to say, you know, have to actually endure the weight of what they did, I really also would love to see the NCAA give way to something much better from a governing body, like an NCAA commissioner. So all that being said, it's a tough place to be. Because again, I don't want to be on here and be like, well, Michigan stinks, they cheated, they don't deserve anything. Like, the reality is, like, JJ still made crazy throws, and Blake Corum was a dude, and that defense was awesome, and they beat Ohio State, Iowa, Alabama, and Washington all in a row. And I don't care how easy their schedule was in the beginning. That is a tough, it's a tough road for anybody, right? And they did it. They did it their way. They did it with physicality and toughness. And they were great down the stretch. So, like, I don't want to take anything away from them. But if they, you know, all the smoke leads to them cheating with Sinegate. And it did help them. And so I would like to see the NCAA actually do something about that. But I don't believe they will. I believe at best they will give, they will say things that will sound bad that aren't. And at worst, they will do nothing, which hopefully actually happens, because then we can say, see, this is a sham. Let's get real people to do this. Let's get real leaders. Because that's what we need. We need real leaders who actually govern for the good of the sport. So that'll do it for the Big Ten Football Talk podcast. Again, Monday mornings at 7, you can tune in. Make sure you follow us on the College Huddle. Big Ten Huddle is at Tuesday night, 9 p.m., the football episodes. Check it out. Take care. God bless.